Okay, so I hope you're all sitting comfortably. We're going to recap on the overview of the story of Ruth and Naomi and their families. "Can't we stay in Bethlehem?" Naomi asked her husband. "We have family and friends. Rain will come someday. The crops will grow again, and the famine will end."
"I don't want to wait, Naomi. If we go to Moab now, we can take plenty with us to have a good life there. But soon there will be very little food to eat in Bethlehem."
"But what good would life be without God?" Naomi worried about their two sons. She knew that Moabites worshipped idols, but Elimelech did not seem to be afraid that his sons would do that, even would ever do that. So they packed their belongings and moved to Moab. Naomi's husband began a business there. The years passed, and Naomi never stopped listening for any news from the land of Israel. She missed her family and friends. She missed going to Jerusalem to worship the Lord. Her sons were growing up and would each need a wife soon. But even though the famine was over, Naomi's husband made no plans to return to Israel. Then Elimelech died, leaving Naomi alone with her two sons. She tried to talk to them about going back to Israel, but they said Moab was their home. "What about wives? We have each chosen our wife among the girls here." Naomi was sad, but she liked Orpah and Ruth when she met them. She treated them as if they were her own daughters. She prayed for them every day and told them all about the Lord. Orpah listened just to be polite, but Ruth wanted to hear every word. Then something else sad happened to Naomi. Both of her sons became sick and died. "God has left me alone." She had lost everything that was important to her. Naomi had no way to make a living, so she would have to beg for everything she needed to stay alive. "I'm going home to Bethlehem," Naomi said. "At least there, if she starved to death, she would be among her own people." Ruth put her arms around her mother-in-law. "We'll go with you," Orpah agreed. "No, you have families here. Go home to them. They will find a new husband for each of you." Orpah took Naomi's advice and went home, but Ruth refused to leave Naomi. "I will go where you go. I will stay where you stay. Your people will become my people. Your God will be my God." Naomi left Moab and returned to Bethlehem, taking Ruth with her. When they arrived, Naomi learnt her mother, father, brothers, and sisters had all died. Though she had other relatives, she did not ask them for help, and no one offered her any. Ruth comforted her mother-in-law. "I will go and gather grain that's left over from the fields being harvested. We will have enough to eat. The landowners will not be kind to you because you are a woman from Moab. The Lord our God will protect you and provide what we need." And the Lord did. The first day Ruth went into the field, she met Boaz, a wealthy landowner who loved God. He found out who Ruth was and how kind she had been to Naomi, so Boaz treated her kindly too. When Ruth told Naomi about Boaz, Naomi was filled with hope. She could tell that Boaz liked Ruth very much. "He is a relative of my husband who died. Do exactly what I say, and everything will be fine." She told Ruth to dress in her finest clothes and go to the threshing floor where the men worked and celebrated the harvest. "Sleep at Boaz's feet and let him know that you would be happy to marry him. He will tell you what to do then." Ruth obeyed. Boaz happily married Ruth, and they had a son, Obed. Boaz took back Elimelech's land and gave it to Obed. After that, Elimelech's family always had their own property. Naomi loved her grandson, Obed. She took care of him as if he were her own son. All her friends were happy with her. "You have a family again because of Ruth. She is better than seven sons." Naomi laughed with joy. "God did not forget me."
Okay, thank you, Paula. So we have had a few great weeks working our way through the Book of Ruth, and perhaps you thought it was all over, but we are going to have one more talk squeezed out of this passage. In that summary of Naomi's story, we're going to look at the different elements and the things that Naomi went through on with the thought of Mothering Sunday in mind, and the different experiences that she had in her motherhood journey. So as we know, Naomi's story began with the famine in Bethlehem, and Elimelech and Naomi deciding to leave with their sons and start a new life in Moab. Now, Naomi had to leave her friends, all of her support work, because she was trying to give her children a better life. And like mums and dads, and in fact, lots of adults make these kind of sacrifices all the time for their children, to provide food and shelter, to make them feel safe and secure, to protect them, to show them their love. John's going to sh share a PowerPoint tweet now. It's a tweet that was shared towards the end of last year. Here we go. I'll give you a moment to read it. It kind of sums up the kind of sacrifices and the kind of things that parents do for the love of their children, taking different hits for their ego as well as other things to make sure that everyone's happy. Okay, thank you. So while they're in Moab, Elimelech dies, obviously, and Naomi is left to raise her sons on her own as a single mother. And these days we've got all sorts of families in different shapes and sizes where there are mums raising children alone, like Naomi. There are others that are co-parenting, others in relationships, but actually the other partner is very unsupportive. There are blended families, separated parents, couples that are in the middle of some difficult divorces. And all of these scenarios come with so many different challenges when it comes to parenting and just like getting through life. And after losing Elimelech, Naomi also had to mourn the death of her children. And there are lots of different experiences that lead to grieving the loss of a childhood. There's the obvious ones and the acknowledged losses, but there's also lots of hidden pain and private sadness too. Later, when Naomi returns to Bethlehem from Moab and Ruth is with her, they get there at the beginning of the barley season. And actually in Ruth, chapter 2, verse 2, Naomi refers to Ruth as my daughter. But it was Ruth that chose to accompany Naomi back and support her as a foster daughter. Usually, the choice of fostering or adoption is made by parents rather than the children. But either way around, it's a huge commitment. It's there's a lot of love exchanged, and it's a life-changing experience when that bond is made and that commitment is made between the parents. And when Ruth and Naomi are back in Bethlehem, the whole town is buzzing. They're saying, is this really our Naomi? Everyone is so happy to see again. Naomi's not alone in her sadness initially, and also she's not alone in the joy that comes later. She has a whole community around her, and as do we. We might be far away from our own biological families and our childhood friends and different people we've had experiences with, but we're now here in Cottenham, wherever we're joining Zoom from, with different friends, different family, and we also have our church family as well to get through different scenarios. We heard last week from Kate that when Naomi held Ruth and Boaz's baby in her arms, the neighbourhood women started calling him Naomi's baby boy. As a grandma, Naomi took on a new role in her mother's journey. Some of us in this group are grandmothers. Many of us are godmothers, or we're aunts or uncles, and we have ties that are either by family or through friendship. Or maybe there's other extended motherly roles, both for men and women. And these roles are quite different to the mother role, because offering that extended support network and a safe space for children to go to, or teenagers to go to in times of trouble or when they need advice, just widening their horizon. So when we look at Naomi's experiences, it becomes very clear that motherhood doesn't have just one norm. There is no typical mother role. And as we travel through life, that motherly role, it evolves, it morphs to fit the space that we're living in that moment. Some of you may remember back in the 90s, there was a sitcom on the television called 2.4 Children. Back then, the average number of children in a UK family was 2.4, so hence the name of the programme. But the irony was that the Porter family who were in the programme were not very average at all. Bill, who was the mum in the programme, wasn't average either. And neither are any of us. None of us have 2.4 children. We're all quite unique. We feel confident and equipped in some areas and totally lost and out of our depth in others, and a whole range in between. And the children and young people that we're supporting, raising, interacting with, they're all unique too, facing different challenges, different ages, needing different support. We're going to watch a little clip in a minute from Home for Good, the charity we're supporting today, which helps us just to think about that diversity of young people's need and the wide range of mother figures who come alongside them and help them. So let's have it. Takes a village to raise a child. And here's just a little image just to help us to focus on that and the idea behind it. The saying captures how a whole community of people is needed to create a safe and a healthy environment for children to grow in and to be able to experience life at its fullest, and for children and young people to really flourish and grow. The proverb originally comes from Africa, and it reflects the emphasis there in the culture on extended family and community. There are slightly different versions in different African languages. I'm going to mispronounce this, but I think it's Sukama. The way they say it is one knee does not bring up a child. In Swahili, it's one hand does not nurse a child. So slightly different versions, but all saying the same thing. And when you think about it, actually, it is completely unrealistic to think that one person, or perhaps even two parents, can meet all the needs of another individual. Now, that might be adults raising a child and meeting all of their needs, but it also might be a grown-up child who's supporting an older relative. The proverb and the idea of supporting each other in a community is also reflected in Jesus's teachings. Okay, living in unity and sacrificing and loving your neighbour. There's a little bit in Ecclesiastes chapter 4. It's actually verses 9, 10 and 12. It helps us to perhaps understand a little bit about God's view on family and friends and working together. And it goes like this. Two people are better than one. When two people work together, they get more work done. If one person falls, the other person can reach out to help. An enemy might be able to defeat one person, but two people can stand back to back and defend each other. And three people are even stronger. They are like a rope that has three parts wrapped together, and it's very hard to break. I like that analogy of a rope. We're called to work together, to help each other, to make a strong rope. If you look up the definition of mothering in the dictionary, you'll find that that mothering rope is made up of strands of caring, kindness, nurturing, protection, a whole range of activities that are involved in raising a child. And those strands are interwived, creating a really strong rope. Together, the strands take the strains of different situations. As one strand perhaps starts to fray, another holds firm. So when a storm comes, together they're really secure. And in our case, as a church family, the ropes that we're part of are also secured to Jesus. So they've got an eternally strong anchor at the end of the rope as well. So here's a little thought. What strand are you in the various different ropes that you might be involved with? You may be the constant, intertwined through the whole length of the rope. That may be the main weight-bearing strand, or it might be a peripheral strand that's just there constantly. Maybe you were called in to reinforce a rope for a particular season, and now you loop in and out, sometimes forming a tight knot again of support, and other times just joining more casually. Perhaps you were spliced into a rope and are now finally interweaved for the long haul. Some people are a colourful single strand that brightens up a rope, bringing joy and laughter into an otherwise very functional rope. There are some ropes that are being loosened as the youthful strands pull away and go out into the world. So what ropes are you tied up in? Today might be a good day to reinforce some of those ties, or to appreciate them, or to consider if there are new ropes to join. So whether it's Naomi's varied motherhood journey, or it's the mix of people in a village raising a child, or it's the different strands of rope wrapped together, the bottom line is that motherhood is quite wide-ranging and diverse, and there's no real norm, and it isn't even restricted to just women or mums.
But we're raised by many different people, as Emma was saying, not just one person or two people, but there's so many people who have input into our lives, who shape us. And today we celebrate mothers. We do become important, and we like to affirm them and thank them and say thank you for all that you've done. But we recognise that in our lives, it's not just mothers or fathers or those who are the prime carers for us, who raise us and help. There are many figures in our lives who come in and draw alongside us and give us the love and support and the guidance that we need. And we celebrate all those people today. And as a church family, together, we are like a family, a tribe, a group who can bring up people and show them the love and the care of God. And only together with each and every one of us do we show what God is. We're going to have a time of prayer. We'll do it a bit differently. We've done this before, but I would like you, on your piece of paper, if you've got a piece of paper at the beginning, to write down those that you want to say thank you for today. Might be your mothers, but it might be other people as well. It doesn't have to be one person. It can be more than one. Those who have had input into your life, who have shown you love and care, who have brought things into your life that you wouldn't otherwise have had. And I'd just like you to either draw a picture of them, or one or two of them, if you prefer drawing pictures, or write their name down on this paper. And then in a moment, we're going to hold them up to this. I might mute you, or you might talk while you're drawing. So on the piece of paper, names or pictures of those who you would like to thank today, people who have had input into your life and shown you. So as we conclude this part of our service this morning, however we entered this day and however we entered this service, may we now know the blessing of God in our lives. May we know his comfort, may we know his love, and may we know not only God the Father, but God our Mother as well, the one who cares for us and nurtures us and walks with us through each day. Amen.